ancient, beautiful, and mystical India. An unlimited, unending source of fascination for people from all over the globe. India is also the birthplace of many holy masters who have shared with the world the paths to spiritual illumination. Geographically, India is very vast, covering an area of 3.3 million square kilometers, making it the seventh largest country on Earth. India is graced with the majestic Himalayas, the highest mountain range in the world. Often called King of the Mountains, it is revered as the home of the gods. The name is derived from Sanskrit, meaning the abode of snow. To the spiritual aspirants of millennia, the grandeur and elevation of the mountains are a constant reminder of the parallel glory and majesty of the human soul, and thus are considered to be of ultimate sacredness. In the early 1980s, profoundly moved by the ever-suffering in our world which she had witnessed since the time of her childhood, Supreme Master Ching Hai made a selfless and momentous decision to forsake the comfort of her personal life. Supreme Master Ching Hai's earnest quest for truth and enlightenment for the benefit of all beings culminated in her courageous journey in various parts of India and eventually the divine Himalayas. We now invite you to listen to Supreme Master Ching Hai's lecture entitled Master's Pilgrimage to the Himalayas, given on July 7, 1997, during a gathering with our association members in Los Angeles, California, USA.
Supreme Master Ching Hai's lectures are not a complete meditation instruction. Please do not try alone. For free of charge guidance, please visit www.godsdirectcontact.org or contact any of our centers near you.
When I started my journey, I took a lot of things, you know, I would need that, I would need this, I would need this umbrella, 3-4 spoon, 2 chopsticks for different size, you know, and 2 cups and 2 dishes and all stainless steel, you know, and all that. And books even, you know, and maps, yeah, and binoculars and glasses and everything. Wow, complete, you know, like a real explorer, you know. But every step I go, I have to drop one thing. Wow, you had no idea how heavy the sleeping bag even can become. When it's damp, you know, and raining a little, snowing a little, and the sleeping bag just suck in all this, and it become heavier and heavier, and my feet also became heavier, because it's a sports shoe that I wear. I have not been in Himalaya before, I thought sports shoe would do. But sports shoe, you know, all the water came inside. And the snow also sneak in, because it's warmer there, you know. And I take refuge in my shoes. And then after I walk for many miles, the feet became very big and heavy as well, you know. And you walk like this. when you have a place to rest, then you have to take all your shoes out, wring your socks, and hang it on some stove somewhere, or wash them. And they wear them again next morning. But most of the time, they don't have time to dry so fast. They don't have dryer in the Himalaya. And in the morning, sometimes we have to go very early to go together with the group, huh? Yeah. And so you have to hurry. So most of the time, I wear also damp clothes. Very damp. I have only 2 pairs of clothes, so I get 1 wash and 1 wear. But sometimes both of them look like washed because it's all in the rain, you know. So I have a choice either to wear that one, you know, soaking in the rain, or to wear the other one was soaked in the stream water. It's both the same. Sometimes they don't have time to dry. But after you walk for a while, you know, it dries by wind and air and your temperature of body. It can dry, because if you walk, your temperature rise up, you became hot. And most of the times I walk. Sometimes in the very rare region, they have horses for rent. And they have, they call laborer who carry you behind, in the back, or 4 laborers to carry a sedan chair kind, and you sit in the middle. But be careful, because it's very slippery. Sometimes they throw the customer, you know, down. and four of them also crawling, you know, and the five crawl together, and the chair became pieces, you know. It's very dangerous sometimes. That's why people don't often go there. And if they go there and they came back in one piece, they think they're very lucky. Yeah. Sometimes one piece is in the Himalaya, another piece flow down the ocean, and another piece hang on the tree somewhere. Yeah, because it's dangerous. If you just walk not carefully and slip, you know, one step, and you became like sometime, you know, dust. Because so high, you become four different pieces. A lot of people die every year going on pilgrim. Okay, let's go back to the scorpion stuff. Another time when I stay also in near the Himalaya, another place called Rishikesh, they also rent this kind of mud houses. Because the house inside is stuffy, you know, they don't make a very big deal, like big window with screen door and all that. So most of the time I climb up the roof and sleep. Yeah. After a while, many other people, neighbor, you know, the pilgrims like me or sometimes Westerner, they go there and meditate. Because there are a lot of ashram around there. You know, one of the master, very famous, this master from the Beatles, you know, transcendental meditation, yogis, he originate from there too, in that place called Rishikesh. A lot of masters went there in different times to meditate. I also stayed there for 2 months and meditate sometimes. And so I went to the roof to sleep. And you know, most often the scorpion come up to the roof like me, do yoga exercise and then meditate like big deal and then and in the morning get up, you know, with the sun, exercise and meditate for a while and then go down. But we don't have a staircase, eh? You have to kind of climb the wall with your nails. Because the wall is mud anyhow, and there's some hole in there. You just put your toe in there or you put your finger in there and then you just find your way up. It's okay. I always found my way up. Okay, now let's go to the stop. Did I tell you about my ex-husband when he went there and meet me? Oh, really? Okay, hang on. Don't be too excited and make trouble for me. I forget. Okay, at that time when I was in that place called Rishikesh, did I tell you the neighbor was beaten black and blue? No, okay, next to me. Okay, let's go fast because it's painful. Oh, she was beaten, so swollen everywhere. And I had to go to the hospital. It was so poisonous. But they didn't bite me. But I found one, you know, next to my pillow. In the morning, he just lay there like dead. And I say, "Hi there, are you alive or dead?" And he moves his whisker, you know, to let me know, don't touch me. I said, no, I just say hello, okay. And then, okay, so that's the place, huh? Okay, so I just tell you the story. At that time, I was about maybe a year or something already in the Himalaya. I didn't see my ex-husband then, the doctor. Nah? I just called the doctor. So what happened is, I stayed there for a while. And then my so-called husband, ex, or last, or never seen again, he went there to meet me. But he didn't know I was there. I also didn't know he was coming. I was in Delhi before and in other region and stay in different ashram, you know, with different masters and different groups, and just to learn here and there and checking out everything. And then I was tired of all the groups and the ashram politics. So I went alone. I went to different places to meditate. And Rishikesh was not the first place and it's not the only place. But this is place where things take place. So, and then I stayed there for 2 months. Then my ex-husband, he had holiday or something, or he missed me somehow. He went to India to find me, and he went to Delhi. the ashram that he knew that I was there before. So he went there, but he didn't find me. So he hang around. Nobody know where I went. He hang around and tried to find somebody who knows me. So anyhow, and meanwhile he was miserable, and they tried to tell him that, you should not worry about your wife. You should worry about your soul, you know. What's that? So, and at that time, he already knew that I was in Rishikesh. Yeah? So he said to them, my soul is in Rishikesh. So the next day, he packed, you know, and he just have a knapsack, you know, backpack. Yeah, and then he went there to see me. But talk about Rishikesh, it's also big, you know. It's not just like our meditation center here. It's a city, you know, a small city. So many ashrams, so many things going on. So many people all the time. But he went to my room and found me. Actually, I wasn't in my room. I was on top of another mountain where there was a spring water coming out, and I was washing my clothes, yeah, and taking a morning bath. Sometimes I go to the Ganges River and take bath there, but sometimes I took bath next to the stream near my home, my rented room. Okay, but another story took place before that. Okay. Meanwhile, before my ex-husband came, there was another friend who came. When I stayed in one ashram in Delhi, he was there too. And he was kind of famous because he's Canadian Chinese, the one and only in the group of Indian or Western people. And I'm also one and only kind of Asian over there. So he and I were both very famous. I was famous because I worked for the ashram, and they named me Smiling Step because they say every step I go, I smile. Yeah. So that's, I never saw if I smile or not. I didn't possess a mirror there. But I was very beloved. And sometimes people even bow to me, you know. They prostrate in front of me, and I scared. I was so scared. Those with long beard and big turban, you know, about 70 years old, it would fit enough to be my grandmaster. Yeah, sometimes they just prostrate to me. I don't understand anything. Anyhow, that was by the way. Okay, and he was famous there, and I also knew him because he brought there the trend like survival into 24 centuries, you know, things like that, with the raw food, you know, sprouts and wheat germs. So everybody in that ashram, because they have nothing to do, they follow him. And he was a kind of, you know, survival guru. And then we grow wheat germs on top of our bath tower and grow sprout in front of our, you know, window and or on top of our washing sink, thing like that. So he was famous for a while. Nah? And when I was there for a while, he went there also. He went there, and then he somehow found me, and he saw me, huh? And then he asked me, "Oh, this is a nice room. Actually, very cheap, just a mud house, you know, square like this, a top, no window, no door, you know. Well, you can have a door, but you know, look like no door at all. Quack 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 quack. Piece of wood, and then you have to push with all your might, and then when you open it, bang! Sometimes it bang on your head, you know. It's very difficult. So he likes it because." In such a places, you know, to find a private room like that is heaven. You can stay in any ashram there if you want, free of charge. But you can only stay 3 days in each. That's the rule. Because they don't want you to stay there forever and be attached to the ashram. So they're very hospitable, but 3 days only, and then you move. And then you keep moving all the time. It's very tiring. So got a room like that, and then he was very interested. He asked me whether he can rent one himself. I said, "Oh, not at the moment, not that I know of, but 3 more days, you have one next door to me. Huh? So if you want to wait, or you can come back again." He said, "Oh, I don't have anywhere to go. I don't know how to go around here." The first day, I said, "Okay, then stay here in my room. Yeah? 'Cause I don't sleep here anyhow. I sleep on the roof every day, and you go..." And so you sleep here, you know? Actually, in the ashram before, we sometimes sleep together. Not in one bed, Nama, in one room. Yeah, sometimes ashram, they make very big room, you know, and then you sleep just like in Maori. It's okay, no problem. We don't mind. Huh? So anyhow, we already knew each other. I didn't share room with him, but sometimes we sleep outside together, a lot of people together, you know. Or we went away with the teacher. Huh? Then we just have to sleep anywhere that there is a corner to lay your head on. Or sometimes you cannot. Like sometimes 6 months on stretch, I have to sit. I don't have a place to even lay down. So I have a chair, like folding chair, like you, like on the beach chair, nah? I take it with me. And one of a small suitcase. So in the evening, I just open it and sit on the chair and put my leg on my suitcase. And how I sleep for 6 months. And in the daytime, sometimes I fold it, you know, sometimes I don't. Fold it is better. Then I stay in a corner. You know, like on the roof of any house, they sometimes build a little bit extra higher wall on the roof, huh? And then the corner is like this, huh? So I sit in one corner and I put my blanket on top of that corner, and that's where my house was. Every day. It's just pretty hot there, you know. In summer, it can be 40 degrees Celsius. But I have no place to go, because sometimes the ashram is overflowed with people. So I prefer to stay alone, you know. Even one corner alone is better than together with hundreds of others. So okay, I stay there. In the daytime, I cover with a blanket. In the nighttime, I just sleep under the stars. And sitting, you know. Very, very simple. So when it rains, I don't have much to even move. I just take the chair and the luggage, poof, go into under the veranda roof. I sleep all day and all night there. You know, it's my quarter. I don't have anywhere else to move my stuff inside the house. Everywhere, the cool place, the safe place are all occupied. Even on the floor, everywhere. You know, sometimes like in Maori, huh? Or anywhere that you go, like hotel, and you sleep on the floor. Every corner you occupy. So that's the place where I put my stuff all day, all night, for 6 months. And then, so it's okay, we don't mind, you know, man, woman at that time. Just okay, just a friend. So it's okay, stay here in my room. You know, I can put your stuff here and sleep in this bed. I sleep on the roof anyhow. In the daytime, I'm almost not here because I go out to the Ganges River, swim, take a bath, wash my clothes there, and then put them on the rock to dry. Meanwhile, I hide myself in some of the cave, you know, on the Ganges River side, and I meditate. And then a few hours later, my clothes dry, and I put them back on again. And then I go out shopping. Buy some exciting thing like chapatis and peanut butters. Yeah. And cucumber. Yeah. Most of my meal are like that. Or else I buy flour and make chapati myself in the evening. In the evening I make it myself. This is very simple. You buy flour, some salt in it, huh? And then you just have a plate, you know, aluminium plate or dish, you know, a little bit high like this, so you can even cook soup and tea in it, and you can make chapati on top of it. So I just roll the flour together, you know the way I teach you. And then put on that, and then turn over, and then eat with peanut butter. That's very nice. I live very simple life, because at that time I didn't have much money. I didn't ask for my ex-husband, and I didn't want to borrow from anybody. I just stretch, you know, my money as much as possible. Very simple life.
Blessed viewers, thank you for your company for today's episode of Between Master and Disciples. Join us again on Monday for part 3 of our program entitled Master's Pilgrimage to the Himalayas. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television for Animal World, Our Co-Inhabitants, up next right after Noteworthy News. May your life be evermore graced by the glory and wonder of heaven.
Supreme Master Ching Hai's lectures are not a complete meditation instruction. Please do not try alone. For free of charge guidance, please visit www.godsdirectcontact.org or contact any of our centers near you.
For more details, please visit www.godsdirectcontact.org. suprememastertv.com/BMD.